Violence is never the answer, says the man who whispers to horses. And so we ask, how can one possibly break a horse without it?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 462nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Michael Williams on the boards. Hello, Michael.
Hey there.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hello there.
And producer Kelsey Olson back from college for a visit. Hello, Kelsey.
Hello.
Folks, I once met a 93-year-old woman named Alice who had ridden some 10,000 bucking horses in her life. As a child growing up in the Big Sky country of Montana, one of Alice's first jobs was to help her father break wild horses obtained from the Indians so that he could sell tamed horses to farmers. Now, Alice was not a big woman, nor one of fierce demeanor. In fact, she could easily have passed for, well, a Sunday school teacher. And so I've always wondered, how did that slender slip of a woman take on 10,000 bucking horses and walk away at the age of 93 with a big smile on her face? Well, today we have somebody who just might help us find an answer to that question. His name is Monty Roberts, and you might well know him as the Horse Whisperer. Monty, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much, Michael. Nice to be on with you.
Nice to have you aboard, Monty. Is it true that you are the original Horse Whisperer? We've heard that rumor.
It's a kind of a long story. The guy who wrote the Horse Whisperer book, Nicholas Evans, came to see me in a demonstration in 1989, and he told me that he was going to write a novel based on my work. And as he worked on, he sold it midway to be a movie. And then the movie makers were looking over his shoulders, and it ended up in a lot of violence, and I didn't want to be connected with it at all. And then when I wouldn't endorse it, he said, oh, I didn't write it about him anyway. So, you know, you can take your pick. I don't whisper, and I certainly wasn't the model for that particular novel, because I'm married to the same woman, for instance, for 50 years, and this guy was taking on another man's wife and some things
and
like
doing
that
all
that you have to do in the movies.
You had to make a novel out of it somehow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Monty. You're a world-renowned horse behaviorist, and what exactly does that mean? What is a horse behaviorist?
Well, I have two doctorates in behavioral sciences, and I am a scientist who has studied behavioral patterns of many species, including human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And our behavioral patterns are critically important, and you talk about Alice. Alice didn't have to be strong to work with horses if she understood that they're flight animals, and that their only goal in life is to survive. They have another one to reproduce, but it's not what we do deal with them. The only thing that we come in contact with horses about is survival. And so when they act in a way of fright and want to flee, oftentimes we mistake that for being cantankerous or uncooperative, and we use violence in order to straighten that out. I suppose Alice did not resort to violence and became a partner with her horses. I've learned to do that, and it's been a wonderful experience.
Well, you know, Alice, you know, she rode 10,000. That's what I asked her, how many bucking horses she rode in her life, and she said 10,000. And when I met her, she was 93, and she had this beautiful smile on her face. And on the other hand, my Uncle Walt was a professional rodeo champion. And he was a big man, you know. He had broad shoulders, so broad that he had to walk sideways through a door to get through. And he also, you know, spent a life with horses and recently passed away, a young man of 70 almost.
Where was he from?
Montana. These are Montana folks.
Walt Linderman?
Yes, Walt Linderman.
Oh, my God. I traveled with Walt Linderman, and he ended up with the horse that's in my new book, The
Scotty?
Horses in My Life.
Scotty?
Scotty.
Wow. There you go.
Scotty's in my book. He's one of my favorite horses that I trained. I trained him, actually, for Harley May, and Walt ended up with him.
Uh-huh.
Well, but he, at one time, held all the records for the most money earned on the back of a bulldogging horse.
Yeah.
In my book, Michael, I have a picture of Scotty making his first run in a professional rodeo with me on his back, putting me down on a steer at the Cow Palace, right out over the line beautifully, and it was the first steer he ran in a professional rodeo.
Tell us about Scotty, then. I get a chance to learn something here. I knew Scotty quite well, and watched him for a number of years, and as a matter of fact, after he had been put out to pasture, I went up and collected some great photographs of him for Walt.
Really?
But before we get to Scotty, Walt Linderman was a big man, big shoulders, a rough and tumble kind of guy, and Alice Greeno was a slender little gal, and yet Alice somehow made it through this world of rough and tumble rodeoing, and Walt suffered greatly from it.
Yeah.
There seems to be two different approaches to life there.
Yeah, there certainly is, and the traditional approach was, you do what I tell you to, or I'll hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like it, step up to me, buddy. But those kind of people would be the first ones to fight back if you used violence against them.
Right.
And you know how Granite Head was.
Yeah.
We all called him Granite Head on the road because he was a dogged, go straight forward. There was no elastic in his life whatsoever.
No.
He was a type A, go for 100% everything he did.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Alice must have had a different approach, some kind of, to
yep.
be able to ride 10,000 bucking horses and survive that.
Yep. Alice obviously settled back a little and took a look at it and realized that her brain was better than her brawn, and she probably will, pass away a happier person than Walt was because of it.
Tell us about breaking horses. What is it that we do when we break a horse?
Well, the traditional way to break a horse...
But before we talk about ways of breaking horses, what is it that we do when we break a horse?
Effectively, we cause them not to fight back anymore and become our slave. They
right.
just give up.
Right. Now tell us how we do that.
We do it by tying them up. There's various ways traditionally. I was in Spain last week doing a tour there, and they still use things they call a serrucho, which is like a saw. It's a metal piece with teeth on it that they put over their nose, and they make hamburger out of their nose when they're just 2 years old to show them that man will dominate their life. And my father would tie them up, and he would tie up legs on them and then throw canvas at them to frighten them, and then they'd fall down. And after they fall down about 30 or 40 times and they're tied down on the ground, much like they did in the Horse Whisperer movie, they give up
right.
and they become a slave. And they will do whatever we ask them to do. The point is, however, I think we learned a long time ago that slaves working for us don't do the job that people do that are doing that job because they want to, that are trying to achieve and there's something in it for them. Then the job is done with exceptional
right.
success, as opposed to fighting your way through it and just doing it because you have to.
Well, Monty, you talk about a whole different way of breaking a horse, but you're still talking about breaking a horse, aren't you?
When I do it?
Yes.
No.
You're not talking about breaking a horse?
No, not at all.
What do you do that's different, then?
What I do that's different is, number one, there will be no violence. I do not demand from you anything. I cause you to want to, or it doesn't happen at all. And in fact, I cause a horse to accept his first saddle, bridle, and rider in about 30 minutes. And that takes 4 to 6 weeks when you use violence the traditional way. So it's better, it works faster, and it produces a horse that's far more effective.
How is a horse that is trained in your techniques of nonviolence better than a horse that's simply been broken?
I think you could answer that question by asking yourself, how is a child that's been beaten up and caused to become a vegetable and just do what his father says because he's frightened not to, how is that not as good as the child who is shown, educated, and does his work because he wants to, cooperates, and smiles about it?
Are horses like people?
Horses are very similar to young people,
then let's
to
pick
children.
That, let's pick that up when we get back. What do you think out there? Do you think violence is the way to break the horse, or do you think gentleness works better? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have and are honored to have Bonnie Roberts for joining us today from Colorado. He's on his way to Texas, where I hear they have horses. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. As you know, the Food Chain is media that talks with you, not at you. So pick up your phones today and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. What do you think, violence or gentleness?
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
It's a fact. There simply isn't much room left in the world for wild horses, or for wild people, for that matter. For horses to get along in this world, they simply must obey the rein. Today we ask, is it better to break them with violence and strength, or to gentle them with kindness and reason? Welcome back. This is The Food Chain, What's Eating What Radio. And I am Michael Olson, your host for the hour, with famed horse whisperer and trainer and behaviorist and man about horses of the world, Monty Roberts. What do you think out there, violence or strength and gentleness and reason? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Monty Roberts, we've got a young man on the line who has a question for you. So before we go on, I think we should try giving him an airing here.
Okay.
All right. Wyatt, welcome to The Food Chain. Are you there?
Yep.
Fire
hey,
away.
Wyatt.
What?
How are you?
Good.
How old are you, Wyatt?
Nine.
Okay. You've got a good question for Monty Roberts?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, I just got a new pony, and he's not listening to me what I want him to do. And I've tried a bit, and he still won't listen. I don't know what's wrong.
Well, Wyatt, I can't see him, and I don't know why he's not listening, but did you try him out before you bought him?
What?
Did you try him out before you bought him?
Yeah.
How do you try a horse out before you buy it?
Did you get on
him? Yeah.
And he was okay before you bought him?
Yeah.
And then he just went bad after you got him?
Yeah.
I don't know. Wyatt, you're going to have to maybe get a professional to watch this horse. Where do you live?
In Nicing Marsh Park.
In Santa Cruz, California, Monty.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's some good horsemen right around you there in the Salinas area. And find somebody that will help you and take a look at this pony and maybe make a recommendation to you based upon seeing the pony. I'm sorry that I can't answer over the phone like this.
Thank you. Thank you, Wyatt.
Uh-huh.
Good luck with your pony, big
guy. Thank you for calling.
All right, bye-bye. Uh-huh. Monty Roberts, how do you gentle a horse without resorting to violence? If you don't, if you're not breaking it, you're
The first thing you do is
you're selling it, right?
Sorry,
you're selling it. You're selling the horse on doing something that the horse would not do naturally.
That's correct.
So how do you sell a horse on behaving?
The first thing you do is get their trust. When they trust you, they're so generous and they want to be your partner. They really do. They want a buddy. They're herd animals and they want a buddy. And if you can become their buddy, if you can become trusted by them, and you have to learn their language if you're going to be trusted by the horse. Otherwise, go ahead and break them. But if you don't want to break a horse with force, you must learn their language. And I was interested in what you say about your show, where you don't. You come to talk with the people, not at the people.
Right.
And that's the same thing with horses. You don't talk at a horse and demand from him. You talk with him, and you listen to his issues, too. And you see if you can meet him in the middle and cause a partnership. That's what you want to do with your listeners, too.
Hmm. Well, speaking of listeners, we have a fellow, Alex, emailing us from the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia. And he's Alex says, violence might not be the answer, but being able to physically overcome a horse with halters and ropes and crops and other devices sure is critically important. You've got to establish yourself as the top horse in the herd, or you're done for. If a horse thinks that he can bowl you over and overcome you, he will, and you'll get nowhere. You've got to get their personal, you have to get their physical respect in one way or another, or whispering, in quotes, does not work. How would you respond to Alex?
Alex is all wrong. Alex can go right on doing that as long as he wants and watch the other people that are going by him in competition, because you do not have to get physical respect. You know what you know how to spell physical respect? F-E-A-R. That's what I had from my father. Physical respect. That means fear.
Mm-hmm.
And when a horse fears you, you will get a lesser performance from that horse. You do not let a horse run over you. Of course you don't. And you do use halters. You don't have to use crops. That's overt violence. But you do use halters and things like that to create a partnership. A horse doesn't want to run over the top of you if he respects you and he's your partner. But don't you ever think that you have to have his fear in order to call it respect.
Okay, we're going to go to Arissa now. The folks, the phone numbers are 800-624-2665, 831-4790. This is the Food Chain radio program, What's Eating What Radio. And today we have Monty Roberts on, who is a world-famous horse behaviorist, an author. What's the name of your latest book, The Horses in My Life?
The Horses in My Life, and you can find me on montyroberts.com. And The Horses in My Life are 52, including Scotty, of the most indelible horses that I worked with, and certainly we have a connection there with that horse because I loved him very much.
Well, when we get back, we're going to take a break in a little while. When we get back, we'll talk about Scotty, but right now, let's go to Arissa. Arissa, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael Olson. Can you hear me all right? I'm on a cell phone.
Sure can, Arissa. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, Monty Roberts, I just wanted to say you're really awesome. I respect a lot of the work you do. I've watched several of your movies, or movies about you. And I haven't read any of your books, but we used your technique a lot in my old family. We used to breed horses, and we break the babies using a lot of Pirelli, and we never really used halters. We always would use a Pirelli halter, and I found it very effective to just be on the same level as the horse. And I had a 17.2 hand horse. I'm 5'2", and if you can imagine being such a little person and having to overcome and be on the same level as this huge horse and riding this horse, I mean, if I didn't have your technique, I mean, she would have dominated me and fought back.
Well, that's
and I couldn't have that.
You know, Arissa, I was talking earlier about Alice, little lady named Alice Greeno,
yeah,
who rode 10,000 bucking horses in her life, and she was no more than 5'2" and slight and slender.
Right.
And, you know, she just was amazing. How do you do it? A little lady like yourself with a big horse. Monty?
Yeah.
How do they do it?
Well, if your email was correct, of course they can't do it because they couldn't become physically dominant over a 1,500-pound warm-blood horse. So they don't. They learn how to become a partner. And this lady has studied these methods and has, in fact, forsaken the use of violence to bring a more cerebral approach to it and use the good brains that she has in order to create a partnership.
Orissa, what is your horse's name?
Her name is Gumbelina.
Gumbelina. Well, has Gumbelina ever looked at you and tried you? Has she ever looked at you and said, oh, Orissa, I can put one over on you and I'm going to do it?
Well, I don't know. She's an ex-racehorse, and she's a thoroughbred. And one time at the beach, she reared with me. She didn't like the water. And just a rearing horse is really scary if you've never experienced it before. And it was my first experience with one. And I knew what to do, and I was able to bring her down and calm her down and control her. And she had a lot of respect for me. She knew that I wasn't going to hurt her, and I took her away from the water. And she was fine after that. And we respected each other. She always listened to me, and you can tell a horse is listening to you by their ears. I mean, whether you're lunging them and they're running around you, as long as they've got an ear on you, you know they're paying attention, and she always did that for me.
Michael? Yeah, go ahead, Mom.
Michael, listen to the words that she said. She had a lot of respect for me, and she knew I wasn't going to hurt her.
Uh-huh.
You see, you don't have to spell respect, F-E-A-R. The horse didn't fear her. She respected her.
Orissa.
And she knew she wasn't going to hurt her.
Yeah.
Orissa, thank you so much for the call, sweetie. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and take care.
You bet. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We've got Monty Roberts today, and we're talking about horses. And we're talking about people and how we gentle them without the use of violence, if such is possible. When we get back, we're going to talk about Scotty, which is probably one of the world's greatest all-time bulldogging horses. What's bulldogging? What's Scotty? Do stay tuned. We will be right back. 800-624-2665. Well, what do you think out there? Gentleness or violence? What is the way we can bring horses and wild horses and wild people into a civilized world? Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We're talking with Monty Roberts. And Monty, of course, is one of the people who are known as horse whisperers. Monty's been around for a long, long time. And a lot of people know you, Monty. I guess you must have had, 10,000 bucking horses in your life?
About 70,000.
About 70,000 bucking horses in your life. Monty, you know, when I was thinking about putting this show together, an incident came to mind. Something that happened in my youth when I was with my grandparents at their farm up in Montana. It was a cold winter morning, and we went out to my grandpa and I went out to the barn to milk the cow. A couple cows out there. And the barn was filled with animals. It was a cold winter morning, and there were a lot of animals in the barn. And, you know, we were milking the cow in the light of the lantern. And old Betsy, she went and kicked over the bucket full of milk. And my grandpa, he took one look at her, and boy, he just wailed on her butt with that bucket, empty bucket. And I was looking at him and kind of wondered, gee, Grandpa, why are you being so violent with this cow? And when I asked him, he looked and, you know, kind of pointed to all the other animals in the barn and said, well, if I let her get away with that, all these other critters are going to get away with it too. So I had to put my foot down and let them know who's boss. Would there have been another way to do that?
Of course. What in the world good would it do to beat a gal with a bucket? The next time you come up to her with the bucket, she's going to kick it or make another mistake, and you're going to be right in a spiral of violence. There's never any education in anything like that. That's an old wives' tale. It's the way people did it before they fought, and it isn't necessary. Violence is never the answer.
Good. Okay. You worked with a lot of horses. You've written a book called The Horses in My Life. One of them is a horse named Scotty, and I guess we both know that horse from a fellow named Walt Linderman, who was my uncle and a running mate of yours at one time. And Walt was not a gentle kind of man. He was, like I was talking about earlier, he's a broad-shouldered kind of man, the kind of, you know, shoulders so broad he had to walk sideways through a door And there was no way he was going to let the world push him around.
Right.
And yet you were the one who trained his horse, Scotty.
Yeah, and he didn't have to be violent with Scotty. Scotty was already trained when he got him.
Yeah.
Could I take a minute to read you from the book on Scotty?
Oh, please do.
A little bit?
Please do.
Okay. Scotty was owned by John W. Jones and Harley May. I trained him for Harley May, and then John W. Jones bought him, and they both let him get away. And they let him get to a man named Walt Linderman. They didn't believe in him. And Walt hit the road in late 1964 with a good Hayes horse and Scotty. The record this horse created in the next 12 years is absolutely unbelievable. Scotty was responsible for two cowboys winning three world championships. Ironically enough, one of them was Harley May, a former owner of Scotty, who became the world champion bulldogger in 1965. The other was Jack Roddy, who won on Scotty in 1966 and 68. Walt himself won three runner-up titles in 66 through 70. No, in 66, 70, and 71. The National Finals Rodeo accepts only the top 15 bulldoggers each year, and Scotty won five times, four consecutively. That has never been done before or since. Guess who won on him in 1965 and 1968? John W. Jones, one of Scotty's former owners. When Scotty reached 14 years of age in 1971, he was retired from professional competition and became the favorite bulldogging horse of many high school and college cowboys. Scotty enjoyed this work. And so much, I figured that if he had it his way, he'd just be out there running past steers all on his own. Horses are excited by competition, and in the absence of force, they'll love it as much as the people do. At 20 years of age, Scotty went on to live with the Yetter family, who agreed to keep him in pasture for the rest of his life. He had never been sick, and he had never been lame, and died of natural causes. I am proud to have played a part in giving Scotty his early training. He became the champion he deserved to be.
What about, let's start with the people who are not familiar with the world of rodeos. What exactly is bulldogging?
Bulldogging is where a horse is so important and he carries you past a steer as fast as possible because everything is on the clock. And you ride past the steer getting down on his horns as the horse goes by, and then it's left up to you barehanded to wrestle the steer to the ground when the time stops. And it's steer wrestling or bulldogging. And the horse is absolutely the difference between champions and not champions.
So one chases a steer. How heavy are these steers?
600 to 800 pounds.
So you're running a quarter ton cow down. You're jumping off a horse, landing on the cow's back and rustling it to the ground. That's bulldogging.
That's bulldogging.
How did you train Scotty? Take us through that process. You remember that?
Sure. Scotty was won in South Dakota by Harley May for winning an all-around championship in a rodeo, and he came to me. It trained a bit, but really nervous and frightened about the whole process of trying to bulldog off of him. Harley had been trying to bulldog a little bit off of him, but he was a horse that was just jittery and really nervous about it. And I ran about 20 steers a day with him quietly, let him do it on his own, let him learn how to do it, and I rewarded him far more than I disciplined him.
How did you discipline him?
Well, I disciplined him by putting him to work when he was wrong. For instance, if he went down through the arena and widened and didn't go close enough to let me catch a steer, then I would bring him to the right and canter him in small circles for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And then he would go down through the arena the next time and think, I better not widen like that. I better stay straight, or he's going to counter me in those right-handed circles.
So that's
again.
That's kind of like the equivalent of giving a child a timeout, right?
That's a timeout, or maybe an agreement that you clean the tiles in the shower or the toilet if you do something wrong, but it's pre-organized.
Mm-hmm.
You pre-arrange it, and you pre-agree to these things. And so you set up contracts, and I set up contracts with Scotty, and soon he learned the pathway of least resistance. Soon he learned how to have fun with it, and he would blast me past the steer and go down to the corner of the arena where he was supposed to be. But you know, Scotty wasn't very fast. Walt would argue with you about that, but he couldn't win a race. He wasn't very fast. The horses that John W. Jones and Harley were using could outrun him in a race, and that's why they didn't believe in him. He wasn't very fast, and he had to use his mind. He got you the start that you needed to get, and he was fast enough to get by that steer very quickly if he used his brain. And he could run fast enough to do that, but he wasn't a racehorse. But he was smart, and he would always go to the right when the steer did and go to the left when the steer did and give you that shot that you needed, and that's how he became a champion.
Well, ooh, Monty Roberts, the man who whispers to horses. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson here. If you'd like to talk with Monty, the phone number's today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. And when we get back, I'd like to ask Monty about the intelligence of horses and other animals. I mean, if you're actually selling them, it seems to be they must have a little bit of intelligence about them, probably more than we ascribe to them. What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We've got Monty Roberts, and you do too. Pick up your phone and join us. Thank you very much. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking horses with Monty Roberts and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Monty, when I was a college student, I went back home to Montana and got a job on a ranch and enjoyed the work immensely. In the evenings, I'd go out and get a horse out of the pasture and ride out into those long Montana twilights in the prairie, you know, and spend hours on a horse or so. There's one horse in the pasture, though, that would never let me get near her. It was a filly that belonged to the rancher's daughter. And one weekend, the rancher took his family out of town and left me in charge of the ranch and went out to the pasture. And lo and behold, this little filly came up to me and nuzzled me and put her head right in the oat bucket. And I thought, oh, my goodness, she came up to me and wants to go for a ride. So I put a rope halter around her and started walking her back to the barn. And she just complied so gently and beautifully that I thought, well, what the heck? And put the rope halter on her, jumped up on her back and gave her a little nudge, and she walked really gently and obeyed everything. And so I thought, well, hey, what the heck? And nudged her again, and off we went running and across the pasture, and she headed straight for the pig pen fence and ran right up to that pig pen fence and dug her front feet into the ground and put her head down, and there I went right across into the pig pen fence. And how smart are horses? I mean, I'm firmly convinced that she nailed me.
Yeah. You know, Michael, they are brilliant, but it's a narrow range of intelligence because they're a flight animal and they only have two goals in life. One is to survive and the other to reproduce. And so they don't have these complicated things like ego and greed. They don't run around contriving things.
You don't think she was contriving to get me?
Yeah, well, they don't contrive. She was responding to the moment, but they can only think for about 3 seconds on the moment. But they're brilliant in the narrow range, and they are survivors. You take the scientists from the Stanford Research Institute up to northern Nevada and turn them loose with the Mustangs and come back in 2 weeks and see who's better off, the Mustangs or the scientists. And you'll find that the horses know how to survive in life way better than we human beings do. But it is a narrow range because they are a flight animal. They are not, the complicated intelligence of a human being or even the primates.
Mm-hmm. We've got some questions on the board here. One of them, we're talking about rodeos. Does Monty think that some of the activities in rodeos are cruel to horses?
I think that rodeo is very kind to horses, very, very kind to horses. I think there's some things that should be changed about rodeo. I don't think there's any reason to have the calf roping. I'm totally against it, and I don't think that any rancher would ever hire you to rope his calves like they do in a rodeo. The wild horse race is just about gone, and it was silly and useless, and I don't agree with it at all. the OMAC suicide race and steer jerking are just about gone. I don't believe in them, and I think that they are cruelty to animals.
What about spurs?
Spurs are all right if you're using them for a signal and not for pain, but if you're cutting a horse and causing blood, you're violent.
Mm-hmm. So no violence whatsoever?
No.
Well, tell us again what the difference is. One more question here. Can a horse be ruined by violent methods forever, or can you always get results even though the horse has been mistreated in the past?
You know, horses never forget, but they can really forgive. And it's amazing how horses that are messed up will come back and perform for you when you get it right. But don't fool them two or three times, because they will be irreparable at some point.
And so there is a point at which you can actually destroy a horse. What about people, Monty? You know, you talk a lot about horses. Do the techniques that you use to gentle horses, can they be applied to people as well?
Absolutely. I took over a school in England, Kingshurst Junior School in Birmingham. It was a failing school and scheduled to be torn down. It had a long history of failing to produce literate children. And in 4 years, using my concepts, it has become a center of excellence. It has risen from the bottom 2% of 34,000 schools to the top 5% of the same 34,000 English schools.
How did you change things?
Change things by taking the violence out, no demand, empowering the children to make their own decisions, but be responsible for the consequences of their actions. And it's just amazing how it's worked. I'm working with Conocti School District in Northern California right now, mm-hmm. to try to emulate that same thing that I did in England. I'm also working with the Aboriginal schools in Australia. I don't know whether you know this, but I was born and raised on the rodeo grounds just a few miles from where you are.
Salinas?
Yep.
Wow. Couldn't get away from it, could you, Monty?
No.
Tell us, got a moment left before you have to take off for Texas, where we do hear they have horses down there. What is the single most important thing about gentling a horse that you can think of?
The single most important thing is not to be violent. The next most important thing is to observe the horse and learn from him what he wants to do. When you can go where the horse wants to go and cause a partnership, then you'll get breakthrough performance.
Monty Roberts, thank you so much for joining us today. How do we get in touch with you?
MontyRoberts.com. Come on there. They tell me there's some exciting things going on my website, and you can see about the halter that I use and the books that I've produced and the videos, too.
And when we get back, we're going to talk to one of your students, Kelsey Olson. So do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain. Thank you, Monty, so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on, Michael.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with a wrap-up on today's program. Gosh, we had Monty Roberts, who is one of the original horse whisperers, a man who says that violence is not the answer. Monty had to leave, catch a plane, flying to Texas, where we hear they have horses down there, but we don't believe it. So sitting in to fill in the time, we have Kelsey Olson. Kelsey, you're a horse person, been a horse person almost all your life. I remember the first time I saw you on a horse, I think, was with a guy named Turk Greeno, who is one of the world's all-time champion rodeo cowboys. And Turk was putting you up on his horse, and we have these great photographs of you, and you've been a horse person ever since. What Monty Roberts talks about, being gentle with horses, does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I think
Whoops, just a minute here. Let me pot you up there. Try that now.
I think that the respect that people and horses can have with each other is a beautiful thing. I think that violence is unnecessary when you are with animals in general. And I think that if we can work together and have a friendship with each other, it's so much better than having to be forceful. And I think that...
Does it always work, though? I mean, does it always work to be gentle to a horse? What happens when they start running away with you?
Turn them in a circle and try again. You can't just use one thing. You can't just use force. You have to be patient. You have to be patient with your children. You have to be patient with your friends and family. And I think that's what horses should be for us. I think they should be our family and our friends. And I think that you can't just give up on them and resort to violence and force. I think that you wouldn't, hopefully you wouldn't do that with your kids now, would you? I mean,
what do you think being raised with horses has taught you about life?
Oh, good question. I think that respect for animals is a huge part of it, or respect for their beauty and their grace and everything that they can bring to your life, happiness and joy.
Do you think that helps you get through college?
No, I don't.
Thank you so much, Kelsey Olson, for sitting in for Monty Roberts. Not bad, huh? Folks, this has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We've been talking horses today with Monty Roberts, who's one of the world's most famous horse behaviorists. He's trained many horses, many famous horses, one of which I happen to know, a horse named Scotty. Last saw him in pasture up in near Belfry, Montana, a beautiful, beautiful animal. And what a wonderful look he had about him, a bulldogging champion. I want to thank you all, and stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.